This Is Your Life, Season 1, Episode 10. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cachat. Oh gosh, did I just mess up my own name? Let me try that again. Who am I? Okay, just so you know, this is what happens when you have a billion children. You forget who you are.
I know, exactly.
All right, so my name is Michelle Cachat. I am the co-host of today's episode, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt, who probably does know how to say his name.
My name is Michael. And I'm glad I'm here.
I'm so glad
Thank you.
So there's an old proverb from the Bible that says, and this is from Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Now, I've heard that verse multiple times in my years of life, and that's a pretty strong statement. You know, King Solomon, who said that, was a king. He was a powerful and very dominating leader, and yet he emphasized the heart above intelligence, goal setting, strategy, team development, social media. Can you imagine?
He emphasized it
more than social media. Culture, productivity, all of that. So he really emphasized the heart above everything else. And today we're going to be talking about what guarding the heart looks like in leadership. Now, before we go any further, Michael, I have to ask you, do you agree or disagree with Solomon's words? Which is kind of funny because I'm basically asking you to either agree or disagree with God.
What do you say to that? What do you say to that? You know,
do you disagree with the Bible?
Yes, no, I totally agree with that. And, and I would just say even more so, I agree that it's the wellspring of life, that it's the most important thing you bring as a leader to the table. It's more important than your experience. It's more important than your education. It's more important than your skills. It is the thing that really makes a difference in your leadership and the impact that you want to have in the world. If you come with your whole heart, it's very different than coming without it.
You know, so contrary to what our environment, what our world kind of says, especially living in the kind of place where we live in the United States and other countries, those of you that are listening in internationally, some of you probably find yourself in similar cultures where we don't emphasize the heart. We emphasize everything else, mainly the external, what we can see and what we can touch.
Absolutely.
And intellect.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. I mean, it's all the stuff that either can be measured or the stuff that's outward, that's what gets emphasized. So as a leader, you know, what's really important according to kind of what we hear is, you know, where you were educated, where did you get your MBA, who did you train under, what skills have you developed, you know, what have you accomplished, and all of that. And you never hear, rarely hear anyone talk about the heart.
Yeah, when's the last time somebody asked you, Michael, what's the condition of your heart?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
well, actually,
we don't
tell you
talk
in this episode.
Fabulous. So now I'm going to ask you, as a leader, you've been leading for a long time. You've been in the business world, the corporate world for a very long time. And I'm gonna ask you to go a little personal, which I know is not always that comfortable, but this is too important of a topic for us to gloss over. Mm. I really think we need to take it down to a very personal level. So as a leader, have you ever been in a position where your heart was compromised, where you, because of circumstances or whatever, that your heart was damaged or hurt or wounded in such a way and you weren't in a place of guarding your heart?
Yeah, I think it happened for me a couple decades ago. But, you know, I entered the workforce and entered particularly into publishing because I loved books and I loved having an impact on people. And I knew in my own life, it was the books and the speakers that I heard that really had changed my life. And so I loved working with authors. I was very optimistic. I was very idealistic about it. And I had a client that I had a longstanding relationship with. And it was a deeply personal relationship. Not only that I worked with, but somebody that I really looked up to.
And this wasn't somebody you had just worked with for, you know, a few months or, I mean, it was years and years, correct?
Yeah. Long relationship. And somebody that I considered not just a client, but somebody that was a friend. And so what happened to me was that one morning in my office, without warning, without anything, I got an email from him where he basically fired me. Well, he didn't basically fire me. He fired me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was obvious that the email had been vetted by an attorney, because it was one of those very cold, very impersonal, you know, I regret to inform you that your services will no longer be needed kind of, you know, email. Very short, less than a paragraph.
From someone that you had relationship with.
Well, I mean, somebody that I talked with every day.
Yeah. So to get that over email is painful enough, but to get a kind of a canned email or kind of a cold email is just, it's just salt on the wound.
And I didn't really see it coming, which may say more about me than even him, but I didn't see it coming, and it just appeared out of nowhere. Well, initially I was confused. Then I got angry, because I thought it wasn't fair. I didn't have a chance. I don't even know what the issue is. I mean, why am I being fired? There was nothing in the email that made that clear. So I called him. I mean, that just seemed like a natural thing. We didn't live in the same city, so it wasn't possible for me to show up on his doorstep, though I would have. That would have been the best of all possible worlds, but I didn't have that option. So I called him. He wouldn't take my call. So I spent literally the next 3 months trying to work with his staff to get a phone call, which he wouldn't give me. And then finally, after about 6 months, he agreed. And I would call him every couple of weeks, and I think I just finally wore them down, but he finally agreed to meet with me. So
pause for just a minute. What was your hope in even that meeting? So some people in that kind of situation, you know, you just want to run as far away. But what were you wanting in order to be able to connect with him?
I feel like I needed closure.
Yes. I can see
because
that.
Because actually when this happened, I said to my wife, I said, I just need a couple weeks I just need you to let me to shut down. I'm going to take off work. I don't even know what to do with this. It was a deep grieving process for me.
This wasn't just a client.
This just wasn't a client. But I remember saying to myself, and it's these kind of almost inarticulated silent vows that get us in trouble. Mm-hmm. But I remember saying to myself, I will never allow myself to get that close to a client again. Because the pain is so great when it's severed that it's just not worth it. I'm not going to get that vested in somebody when they can fire me with an email. I was wounded. I was deeply hurt. And so I needed this meeting to try to bring some sense of closure. And frankly, I wanted to learn from it. You know, what was it? I mean, it's just like one of those things that even months later, I'm in the shower, I'm out for a run, and I'm thinking about, what the heck did I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't get it at all.
Just at a loss.
Just at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got the meeting, and I finally found out what the real source of the trouble was. And as it turned out, didn't have anything to do with me, and I don't want to get into the details. It had to do with kind of an intramural squabble among the staff, where there was some politicking, and I just happened to be the guy that was easy to throw out because I was challenging some of the inner workings of their staff by my role working for him. So let me just leave it at that, because I just don't want to say anymore. But the point is, my heart shut down.
Yes.
And I was unaware of it, but I continued in this condition where I really brought my head now to my work, brought my body to my work. I brought some energy to it, but I did not bring my heart.
Yeah, because you had made that. I mean, nobody wants to get hurt like that again.
No.
So you had made kind of that vow, I'm never going to let myself get hurt like that again.
That's right.
And shut
and
it down.
Handicapped my leadership.
Okay, now let's talk about that. So you went forward, you brought your head to work, but you left your heart behind because you just were not going to go to that place again. So talk about what that looked like in kind of your day-to-day and how it started to impact your leadership.
The problem with this is that it quickly turns to cynicism. And cynicism is, first of all, a poison that infects a lot of cultures, corporate cultures, churches.
Families.
Marriages. No,
yes,
seriously.
It's true.
And it's a self-protective device. It's basically a way that we have of popping our own balloons so that somebody else doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than get our hopes up or begin to believe or begin to hope, we just go ahead and, you know, imagine the worst case scenario, pop our own balloons and
because we don't want to be disappointed.
We don't want to be disappointed. So, you know, somebody suggests to us, they say, hey, have you thought about going on that marriage retreat with your wife? And you say, you know, there's no way she would go with me on a marriage retreat. I mean, she's so, you know, we just like we say no to the opportunity.
Pop our own balloon. Yeah, absolutely.
Or we think somebody suggests, you know, you really should apply for that position. You would be amazing at it. And you go, like, fat chance that I would have of getting that. So you just, you're just guarding your heart in the worst possible way, not in the way that Solomon means it, but in a negative way of just not bringing it to the party and protecting yourself.
And you think it's self-preservation, but in fact, it's not. And
no.
So there, that's where I want you to go now, is talking about how you thought you were preserving yourself, but actually it was kind of this slow death, right, in your leadership?
To me, the most important leadership tool that you have is your heart. That's the difference maker. It's the thing that can make you stand out from everybody else. When you put all of your being, not just your head, which is really important, we're not dismissing the head, but to bring your heart and your intuition and all those kind of inner, less measurable faculties to it. You know, I mean, just think about listening to a great speech, or if you've ever followed a great leader, it wasn't because they were the smartest person in the room. It wasn't because they even had the best skills. But I can think back on the leaders that moved me the most were people that brought their heart. They were all in. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you a story. I followed Sam Moore at Thomas Nelson. He was my predecessor as the CEO. Sam Moore was the CEO of Thomas Nelson for almost 50 years, a long, long time. He's a Lebanese immigrant. He's got an amazing story. Arrived on the shores of this country with $500 in his pocket. He could sometimes be mercurial, you know what I'm saying, like kind of up and down.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to tell you something. He was all in. He wasn't the—
That's a huge compliment.
Smartest guy in the room. And I don't mean that as anything. He's plenty smart. But he wasn't always the smartest guy in the room. He didn't always have the most technical skills. But he had the most heart. And it was the force of his heart that got him where he was, that took Thomas Nelson from being about a $3 million company in sales to $250 million in sales. It was because he brought his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always inspired me, you know, to bring all of myself to every situation as a leader.
So let's go back to that time where you are taking you're bringing your head to work, you're leaving your heart at home, kind of. If I was working in your office at that time, if I was one of your employees, what Michael Hyatt would I have seen then?
Well, in some ways, and this is kind of a sad commentary on our culture, I'm not sure you would have noticed anything different.
Mm.
Because think of the people that you followed, and you know, you and I have both had the privilege in a sense of following, having some good leaders, mm-hmm. probably some bad leaders. But there's a lack of engagement. There would have been a lack of engagement.
Okay. Just a little detached.
Yeah, you probably couldn't articulate it, but that you would sense that I was a little bit detached, that I wasn't fully engaged, that I might even be a little preoccupied, that even if you were having a conversation with me, you might sense that my head is somewhere else.
And you felt... Yeah, again, you're in that self-preservation mode, which, oh gosh, who hasn't been there? I've totally been there where I shut down to preserve my own heart and emotions because I've been so terribly wounded, and I totally get that. So you're thinking you're protecting yourself, but what were you really feeling behind the scenes?
Mostly numbness.
Mm.
You know, I think I lost my capacity to feel. The joys weren't as high. The lows weren't as low.
Mm-hmm.
I'm choking up just thinking about it because I think it was, I robbed myself and my team of something really important. And it's not that I had so much to offer that was important, but I think for all of us,
mm-hmm.
when we shut down our hearts, we're cheating the people that we love and that we're trying to influence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a self-inflicted wound. You know, it's not something that, like, I mean, first of all, I couldn't control the fact that I got fired. I might have been able to influence it, and if I'd known what was at stake, but I totally could control my response to it. And if I'd been more self-aware, we'll talk about this later, I think I could have managed it better. And of course, we wouldn't be having this conversation about the importance of the heart if I had, so it,
yes.
You know, it all works out. But
this is big, and I appreciate the fact that you're not afraid to, you know, connect with the emotion of this, because there are people that are listening right now, they're in something almost exactly the same.
And it might be their marriage.
It may be their marriage, it may be kids. A relationship with another family member or a friend, or it could be a church organization, it could be an employee or a coworker. I mean, there's so many possibilities. The truth is, as long as we work with people, the potential for being hurt is always going to be there.
Yes.
It's going to be there. And so for some of you that are listening right now, you are in the place where you have shut down. The wound has been too deep, too harsh, too much, and you have completely shut off. The good news is we're not going to leave you there today. We don't want you to leave you in a place where you are numb and shut off and you're starting to rob both your circle of family and your coworkers and everybody else of the best you, but you're robbing yourself of that too. And so now I want you to move us from that kind of really low place, I mean, that you never expected to be in. Some things, there's a story you have for something that happened that helped push you forward.
Yeah. One of the things that, one of the ways that I numb myself is that I just got very busy.
Oh,
so I didn't
goodness.
Have to think
yeah,
about
I've
it.
Yeah, I've been there too.
You know, and
same.
So it looked like I was being very noble and very virtuous and great work ethic, but it was basically, so I never had to face myself and face this deep loss. Mm-hmm. So I was sitting in Colorado Springs having breakfast with what for me at the time was a brand new author to Thomas Nelson. He'd written one book. His name was John Eldridge. And John is somebody, he ended up writing a book called Wild at Heart, but that hadn't been written yet when we had this conversation. This was back in about 1998. And we kind of had the chit-chat like you normally have when you're meeting somebody for the first time. And then John asked me this question, and he said, tell me about your heart. How is your heart doing? And I kind of felt two emotions. The first one was like, I'm not even sure what that is. But of course, I couldn't, you know, admit that. But then the other part was just sort of like, what the heck does that have to do with anything? Now, it just felt very intrusive, too intimate.
Well, and if you're already in a place of guarding, like, not guarding, that's not quite the word, but of being self-protective, you're like, oh, you're not allowed to go there.
Right. I basically spent years burying that so I didn't have to face it. And now you think you're going to ask me a question at breakfast and, like, surface that, and I'm just going to go, oh, yeah, it's, you know, it's fine, or, oh, I'm really struggling with that. No. So I gave him some kind of glib answer. I don't remember what it was. But it annoyed me, and it gnawed at me. And I kept thinking about that question over and over again. So
long after your breakfast ended.
Long weeks and months after that, I'm thinking about, what about my heart? And so that began for me a journey. And frankly, John was very instrumental in that. His book, Wild at Heart, was hugely impactful to me. And he's written a lot about that subsequent to that. But it began a process of me finding and excavating my heart.
And that's tough work.
It was really tough
work. Especially when you're coming from a place of being hurt and grieving.
Yeah. Because it was like, do I really want to risk again? And people face this in romance. You know, maybe that's the context you hear about this. But again, I want to emphasize, we're not talking about that, exclusively about that. We're talking about in a leadership context because it also has an impact there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, my own view is that God gave you this for a reason. And to not use it is to deprive yourself and other people of all that you can be, all the potential, and most importantly, the impact that you can have.
So with the help of John and kind of doing your own excavating, you developed several practices that kind of helped lead you back to a place where you engaged with your own heart again, where you stopped being shut down and you started bringing your heart back to your leadership roles, into your business, into your life. I mean, really, when you shut it down in one area, you kind of shut it down in all areas, don't you? So you started this set of four practices that really helped you to re-engage your heart. Walk us through those. So again, I just, for those of you that are home listening and you're in this place, we want this to be helpful for you. And we're doing this for you. I mean, this is, I have such a heart for this because I know there are some that are living in a lesser, their lesser functioning capacity because of this. And we want to help you get past it. Okay, walk through those practices.
Yeah. So practice number one is to understand the importance. And this isn't, you know, just having a sudden revelation like you're listening to this podcast and you go, oh, okay, I get the importance of the heart. This is something I still to this day have to remind myself of. And here's why. The entire culture is aligned against this.
And we talked about the heart.
Against the heart. It's not, actually not, it's against the heart. It's like almost an exclusive focus on all the external stuff.
Okay.
All the stuff that we can measure and see. And the inward person, that person that exists below the surface, that person that represents the core and the essence of who we are, doesn't get much attention. And so all the emphasis in our culture is on the outward person, very little on the inward person. So you have to remind yourself No, this is important. You can tell when somebody's leading from the heart, when they're engaged with their family from the heart, when they're engaged with their friends from the heart. You can tell the difference. It makes every difference. And you can tell somebody, if you become aware of it, when somebody's holding something back. They're just a little reserved. They're not all in. And it makes a difference. So practice number one is becoming aware of the importance of the heart.
All right. What would the second practice be?
I think just becoming aware of the condition of your own heart. And this requires regular check-ins. To ask yourself that question that John asked me so many years ago, to ask of yourself, how's my heart? You know, especially I like to ask myself this question when I go through something difficult. You know, to make sure that I'm not stuffing that part of my being, the core of my being, down deep, you know, into the dirt, into a dark place. But to just ask myself the question, how's my heart? And to develop and cultivate that self-awareness. Because our heart, as it turns out, is very responsive to what's happening in our environment. You know, like, for example, I might have a fight with Gail, which occasionally does happen. And I realize that maybe I've wounded her. And like a flower that closes up, her heart shuts down. And I can detect that. You know, she like she gets really quiet. Her body posture even changes. And it does for me too. You know, there's no difference there. But but to become aware that there is this dynamic that's under the surface for all of us, and to just train ourselves to be seeing that and asking ourselves the question.
You know, when I hear that, you know, that question, kind of like you responded to John Eldridge, what's the condition of your heart? There's that, you know, there's that piece of me that kind of pulls back just a little bit, because it is a hard question and it requires some effort and requires some time to really be honest. I guess that's really the key, is you have to be honest about the condition of your heart.
Yeah, you really do, because pretending that it's something that it isn't won't get you anywhere, because it, you know, it's like overused, but it is what it is. And if
we so much want to portray too, everything's fine. I mean, like our impulse is to say, oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And that's not really doing the work that we need to do of our self-development when it comes to this.
Well, this is that kind of that Facebook phenomenon, you know, this is like the dark side of social media, where we all live these superficial lives and we manage our images and the brand impressions and how people perceive us. And this is why you end up with on, you know, Facebook, people are talking about the good things that are happening in their life, but they rarely talk about the hard things, which, by the way, let me just say, one of the things I really, really appreciate about your blog and appreciate about my daughter Megan's blog when she blogs, which is not too often given her busy life, is that you guys don't fake it. I mean, you just are so honest. And what that communicates to me, it gives me the freedom to be honest about my own life.
Yeah, you know, it's not easy to do. I got to tell you, thank you. I do appreciate that. It's tough to go there. I mean, it really is. But what I found is, if I continue to shut off that honesty, if I continue to shut off the truth about where I am, a part of me seems to die every single time.
Yeah.
And that if I really want to live fully alive and fully engaged with my calling and my message and leading where I feel like God has called me to lead, then I have to be willing to go there. It's not easy, but I have to push through and be willing to go there.
Well, I think it makes a difference for your readers too, because you're connecting with them at a whole different level. You know, to live a fully authentic life does require this practice of self-awareness. You know, that's where we've got to go first. Just be alert to the condition of our heart.
And what is also surprising about this is when we go there, and you've discovered this as well, we think it's going to turn people off, but often the very opposite happens. It's what we're hungry for, maybe because there's such a lack of it in our kind of culture and business and whatever, that when we actually have the courage to go there, we find such a great, authentic group of supporters that are there as well.
Well, it does. And I'll tell you how this plays out in family relationships. I just thought of this story, but I had a daughter. I have five daughters, but I had one of my daughters that I had deeply offended. And as a parent, I kind of ginned up this self-righteous story in my head as to why I had done, is that the right conjugation of the verb, what I did. And so I didn't want to deal with it. But I could see that her heart was shut down. And so for me to go to her and own that and just to say, honey, I know I've done something that's deeply offended you, and I am so, so sorry. And it really it just opened the relationship back up. I mean, it wasn't immediate. You know, it took work. I think she wanted to see on my part that I was genuine and that I really meant it. But this stuff is real stuff. This is the stuff that makes up our lives. And I had no voice into her life while this was going on. I had no, there was no leadership that I was exercising mm-hmm. in her life as this was going on, because her heart wasn't open. It wasn't open to me, for sure. And so there was not only no leadership, there was no connection, no relationship. And so sometimes we have to go back to this very basic stuff to fix the core of these relationships, and in a business context, so that we can lead again. Hmm. And I think of so many situations in corporations where maybe somebody in a flash of anger said something really hurtful and shut somebody down, and that team member has never quite recovered from it. And the team isn't what it could be, because the leader doesn't, not aware, which is the point we're talking about now, not aware of his own heart or the condition of other people's hearts. And we've got to cultivate that. That is not a sissy, inappropriate skill to develop as a leader in today's world. I would say it's a superpower.
Yes.
It's a Jedi Knight kind of thing, that if you want to lead at the top level, you've got to develop this awareness and this perception where you can get past the superficial and see the condition of people's hearts and know the condition of your own heart, so that when it's in trouble, you can deal with it and then bring it forth.
I'm so glad you said that, because there's this part of us, when we start talking about the heart, it feels almost cheesy or I don't know, just
a little soft things.
Yes, we're just being soft here on this leadership podcast talking about the heart. It's not true at all.
No.
Let's settle that now. This is too critical and too important. And if you choose to invest in this piece of your leadership, it will set you apart as a leader. All right, so we've gone through two of the strategies. I want you to move on to the third one. And you actually mentioned just a minute ago, the word voice, and that's really what this third strategy is all about.
Yeah, and it's a practice, but...
Practice.
But it's a third practice, which is to give voice to that wound or the condition of your heart.
Okay, so what does that look like, give voice?
Well, I mean, I think it's to admit that things aren't okay. You know, to say, you know what? That really hurt. And I'm on the verge of shutting down here. Or that really offended me. And I think sometimes in our culture, and depending on what culture you're in, I can only speak from the culture I live in, but I run around with a lot of Christians. It's very easy to kind of dismiss this or ignore it, or just kind of try to take the high road and say, oh, it was nothing. That didn't really hurt. You know, I'm beyond that. I'm more mature than that. Well, I mean, a hurt is a hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And to acknowledge that does not make you any lesser of a person, but it keeps it from getting buried and coming out in a less healthy way. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So giving voice, does that have to be an actual expression? So does it have to be spoken out loud or maybe written down? Do you need to go to actually talk to the person that hurts you?
Well, this is one of the values of journaling for me, because I journal everything before I talk it out with somebody else. So you may end up having to express it to somebody else. But at least at the beginning, to admit it to yourself, to let it give voice to yourself, to your own consciousness. So you're saying, you know what, that really hurt. Let's just be honest with that. That hurt. I'm wounded
mm-hmm.
or I'm grieving or whatever it is. And then for me, at least writing it out, I believe in this adage that I've quoted many times, which is thoughts disentangle themselves, passing over the lips and through pencil tips. And there's something about for me that I don't know what I think till I write it.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I write it, I get clarity. And so writing for me is a tool to bring about clarity in my own life. And so journaling for me, I do it about 15 minutes every morning. And that's all the time I spend on it. But I journal that. And then once I get clear, part of what that may demand or require is for me to go to that other person and have a conversation. And, you know, for no other reason other than just I want that relationship restored.
All right. So we have understand the importance of your heart, become aware of the condition of your heart, give voice to whatever wounded your heart. And what would be the last strategy for those who really want to start to re-engage with their heart, bring their best self to their leadership, to their work, to their family? What would be next?
Well, first of all, we don't have time to go into all these, so I'm going to try to summarize these, but to develop these ongoing disciplines of the heart. And so this is like rehab, or this is physical therapy, heart therapy. This is the stuff to maintain a healthy heart so that it's strong. So first of all, that when you get wounded, your recovery time, you're more resilient in dealing with it. So I'm much more resilient today. It still hurts when I get hurt. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, even if somebody sends a critical comment or whatever, I still feel that,
mm-hmm.
which is good. You know, I want to feel that.
Well, it means your heart's engaged,
right,
which is the goal. So the goal here isn't to never be hurt. It's just not
That's
to,
exactly
to
right.
pull back and shut down when it happens.
And to numb yourself, you know. So so these are kind of the four disciplines of the heart. And by the way, there's this blog post, and we'll put a link in the show notes to it, called The Four Disciplines of the Heart, that I've written about on my blog. But let me just give you a quick overview of these. First of all, the discipline of reflection, to just take time away from the busy, overscheduled world and to think about your heart and give yourself time to ask that question. How is the condition of my heart? So that's a discipline of reflection. Discipline of rest. Your heart, I promise you, you will lose contact with your heart. You lose awareness of the heart if you're so stinking busy that you don't have time to rest. You can't reflect if you don't rest. And so to take time to get sleep, take naps, something I religiously practice, but mostly time when you can just get away and do some thinking. Then the discipline of recreation. There's something about play that restores our heart. You know, for me to get down like I did last night on the floor with Charlie, my Labradoodle, and to wrestle with him for 20 minutes, I totally lost all consciousness of time. We're just wrestling.
Charlie the therapist. And he can be available for appointments for the low fee of...
That's right. But he was, it was amazing. I was just kind of lost in the play of that, or playing with one of my grandkids. I haven't done this in a while, but Finn, my oldest grandson, would come over and we'd play with these helicopters.
Oh.
And we'd fly them all over in the living room and through the house and stuff.
So much fun.
But to make time for recreation, whether it's fishing or whatever it is, swimming, you know, whatever it is, just time for recreation. And then the final discipline that I talk about that in that post is the discipline of relationships. Michelle, for years, I didn't really have any close friends. I thought that the people I was relating to, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week at work, those were all the friends I needed, except those were proximity friends. You know, they weren't friends of the heart. Now I have, because I've intentionally cultivated it, people that I'm in relationship with, and we don't have any work relationship, we're just friends. And relationships are restorative to the heart.
Yes, they are.
To know that we're known and that we can be fully expressed as who we are and accepted is huge.
Someone that I know that's a therapist, actually a couple of different people have told me this, and I've seen it to be very true, that when we are wounded in a relationship, we also heal in relationship.
Yes, very good.
And so the thought is, you know, when we get hurt in relationship, we shut down, don't do it anymore. But really, the way to heal from a relationship wound is really through cultivating
it
new
is.
Relationships.
And it's counterintuitive, because the thing that's not healthy and is hurtful is we try to withdraw from that, when what we really need to do is to lean back into it and get, you know, maybe requires healthier people in the
yes.
relationship or a different kind of relationship. But living without relationship doesn't work.
This has been a powerful episode for me personally. You know, I know we've been doing this as a recording for others, but also, I mean, just for me personally, this is something that is daily, you know, that we have to constantly be re-engaging and choosing to invest in the heart. I really appreciate your authenticity. I know it's not always easy to go there to the tough places, but it's been very valuable for all of us. Just to recap, for those of you that have been in a place where you have felt wounded in relationship and you really have shut down, it doesn't have to end here. And there is more for you and your leadership, both for the people that you're leading as well as for you personally, if you can have the courage to push through and reengage your heart. And you can do that with one of these four practices to understand the importance of your heart, become aware of the condition of your heart. Don't be afraid to give voice to whatever wounded your heart, and then develop these ongoing disciplines that cultivate the heart. If you have enjoyed today's episode, or you want to get more information about this, maybe you missed some of those practices or wanted to research those disciplines that Michael talked about, you can get all the show notes and the full transcript for this entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you want to actually feel like you're sitting with us in the studio and watch it, you can watch the video of today's program as well, right there on his website again, michaelhyatt.com. Any final thoughts, Michael?
I just think this is one area that's too important to miss. I mean, stop what you're doing and give attention to this, because the heart is, as Solomon said, the wellspring of life. That means it's the source of everything else in your life and your leadership starts with your heart.
Thank you, Michael. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to give you the five necessary elements to building your personal brand.